It's 7 o'clock. Thursday Night Talk starts right now. And welcome to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Tonight, Jana Balakovic is our host. You can call in with questions or comments at 826-4805, 1-800-640-5911, and to our text line, 492-KHSU.
Good evening. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk. As Michael said, I'm Jana Balakovic. I'm your host for tonight's show. And for my day job, I work for the University of California and the Cooperative Extension Program in Eureka. Long gone are the days of exchanging empty milk bottles at the creamery or farm for full ones. As consumers, we're fortunate to meet many of our local producers through the farmers' markets, but for dairy, it's quite different. Tonight, I'm excited to bring three of the next generation farmers to you. These are some pretty amazing folks, and I'm expecting a lively conversation. You might not anticipate it, but tonight, we're joined by a former 2015 Mr. Humboldt, a social media celebrity, and a 2017 dairy princess. So I'd like to say that we have royalty in this show.
Humboldt royalty.
Oh, goodness.
All three of my guests are from multi-generation farms and are consciously choosing to return to the family farm. These are not easy decisions. Each of my guests are highly educated and recognize the significant burden of responsibility and financial commitment to either buy in or buy out their family. What drives them to make this investment when there are likely easier roads and careers elsewhere? For tonight, we're going to dig into bringing healthy milk from happy cows, recognizing that farming is not old McDonald anymore. So I'd like to introduce my three guests here. I've got Jeff Mason in the studio.
Hey, Anna.
He's a third-generation dairyman, and I said Mr. 2015 Mr. Humboldt from the Arcata Bottom. We'll have to find out what that means. And he's his dairy is the Bar M Organic Dairy down in the Arcata Fields. And he's also a Cal Poly graduate. So welcome, Jeff.
Oh, thanks for having me, Anna.
Okay, great. Also in the studio is Cody Nicholson Stratton.
Good evening.
Yeah. He's a seventh-generation dairyman from Ferndale representing Foggy Bottoms Dairy. He's a graduate from Oregon State University in Rangeland Science. And he and his husband have an extensive social media presence on Facebook and Instagram, sharing with the world that farming can be fun and, I'd say, magical.
Oh, yes. Thank you for having us.
And on the line is Genevieve Regley. Good evening, Genevieve. I'm so glad we could pipe you in. She's fifth generation from the Regley Jersey Dairy in Ferndale. She is the recent dairy princess and was a Future Farmer of America California officer and is currently a dairy science major at Cal Poly.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So thank you all for joining me, and I look forward to a great conversation. So maybe each of you could give a description of your farm and dairy and maybe help me understand a couple of those funny little tidbits I threw at you. So maybe, Cody, you could start. And I know you had a big media presence today, so maybe you could talk about your farm and sort of what we're doing today, too.
Yeah, so I am, as you said, a seventh-generation dairy farmer here in Humboldt County, fifth generation on our current farm, which is Foggy Bottoms Jerseys or Foggy Bottoms Dairy. And today we have a social media following on Instagram and Facebook, which is the Foggy Bottoms Boys, and you can basically follow the exploits of your typical gay Northern California dairy farmers. And today I had the opportunity to kind of do a social media Facebook live with the Jason Elliott Show, which was a guy, he's a gay entertainer from the East Coast, and he does stories and tells stories of different people, and today it was dairy farmer in Northern California. But yeah, so we just chronicle our lives. Our farm is it's kind of smaller. We milk 110 cows in the Ferndale Valley, and we're certified organic, humane, GMO-free, and yeah, kind of the normal Humboldt County dairy, I think.
Okay, great. Yeah. Excellent. Big day. How about you, Jeff?
Okay, so my family started dairying in Arcata in 1961. We were originally like timber fallers and doing the original Humboldt County thing, and then we made that switch to dairying. And actually, when we first started, my grandpa, he was actually milking cows both shifts in morning and night, and then working a shift at the Humboldt Flake Board plant in Arcata, too.
So he skipped sleeping.
Yeah, he had two full-time jobs at one point. But then he got out of the Flake Board plant, and they just slowly started adding cows. My dad started taking over the farm in the early 80s when he graduated high school. And then I moved back home 5 years ago now, and I've been helping my dad and slowly transitioning into more of a leadership role at the farm and learning all the stuff that I didn't learn in college. Yeah.
All right. How about you, Genevieve?
Right. So I have grown up on a fifth generation dairy farm alongside my six other siblings. And currently we have around 300 organic Jersey milking cows. So we've definitely been dairying for a long time in the Ill River Valley, and it's definitely a way of life of our family. And I'm just super, super grateful to have had that background growing up, and looking forward to future operations possibly on the family dairy farm.
Excellent. So can you help us understand what a dairy princess is?
Absolutely. So in 2016, I was selected as the Humboldt-Donort District 1 Dairy Princess. And basically, it's a program through the California Milk Advisory Board in which basically you're the advocate for the dairy industry. And they have this role, such as Dairy Princess, to relate to, say, the younger generation, because we did a lot of work at different schools working with the youth, just to kind of explain the process from what it actually takes to get from the farm to the table, and just being that advocate out in the public to really bridge that gap. So that was a year-long term, and it's a contest that takes place every year in May. So for those of you looking for something to do around the beginning of May, definitely something to look into going to.
All right, great. Well, in doing these shows, I really get to enjoy trying to meet my guests and learn a little bit more about who they are and what they do, and get some prep for the conversation. And I can say that I've had a lot of fun over the last week and a half putting this show together. And I know that we've got a lot of ground to cover and a lot of fun topics to hit. But I guess I'm really interested in the family stuff. I mean, you guys each have made a conscious choice to not run away from your family, but to embrace them full on and to embrace that heritage. And I'm sure that comes with a lot of responsibilities. So what's it like to be part of a multi-generational business? And I bet each of you have a different viewpoint on that.
I think it depends on the day.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
What kind of mood everybody is in that day.
Certainly.
Definitely.
No, but when I was a kid, I knew I wanted to be involved in agriculture, specifically the dairy industry, but I didn't think I ever wanted to do the farm stuff. But then I went to Cal Poly. I was a dairy science major there. And then I worked on a large dairy in northern Texas. And I was like, well, this isn't quite for me. I think if I'm going to be in the dairy industry, I'm going to do it at my own place. Because I was like making improvements at this farm, you know, where their milk barn was run. And I was like, well, I'm not directly benefiting from this at all. Somebody else is. So I decided to move back home, and we have a pretty good setup there. We've been shipping our milk through Organic Valley. We got started on their grass milk program, and I go, well, this is a good start for me. So,
well, I mean, yeah. Last week I went out to meet you, and there was your dad, and there was your grandpa, and
yeah,
and that looked pretty darn fun, I have mm-hmm. to admit.
Yep, and my grandma, before she passed away, she did a lot at the farm too. I think she's the one who really wanted my grandpa to buy the farm in the early 60s. But she worked on the farm, and then she drove school bus too during the day. And she was the one who wanted the cows.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Genevieve?
Yeah, definitely. So growing up on being a part of a multi-generational business, it's definitely, you almost feel like you're a part of this legacy, right? Because my family comes from Switzerland as well as the Netherlands, from both sides. So having a dairy background on both sides, you're almost expected in a way to keep this legacy going, and to keep generation after generation. Traditionally, it's going to be up to someone to take over that family farm. It's really been a unique process watching and hearing about how my dad took over my grandpa's portion of the business, and slowly what it takes to pass down from generation to generation. And as we start to look into the future, as my parents continue to get a little bit older in age, that we're looking to my siblings to see who's going to step up, who's going to take this role. And I think that's something that definitely plays out as we get older, especially in our family. And as we see where exactly we want to go, and if we do want to continue this way of life and this family business, especially with the way the dairy industry is going. But it's definitely been this legacy of life, and a life that I'm super, super grateful to have.
Great. Well, how about you, Cody? You're in, right?
I am in. Yeah, and I think whether or not I viewed it as a burden or an honor really kind of depended on where I was in life. I'm an only child, so, you know, Genevieve talks about that legacy and kind of, you know, someone needing to be there to pick it up, and I always felt like that fell to me as the only child, and definitely that was difficult in high school, especially as I was coming to terms with who I was and my sexuality and what that meant to be, you know, on a dairy in Humboldt County. I really didn't want to come back, to be completely honest. I planned on going to college and didn't think I would come back, and kind of thought that was going to be the end of our dairy. And as I went through college, I realized that this was really where I wanted to be. But one thing my parents did that I really appreciated was that they insisted that I take a job off the farm for several years before I moved back. Mm. And that gave me, you know, the opportunity to kind of experience life away from Humboldt, look at other options, and really know that this was where I wanted to be. I think it would have broken their heart if I didn't want to come back. And that was the end of, you know, at that point, a 6-7 generation legacy. But I knew once I made that choice that this is where I wanted to be. And so I moved back, and Grandpa was ready to retire. And so I had the opportunity to buy him out and go in business with my dad. My mom and my dad and I are all equal partners in our farm. So it's kind of a great thing and terrifying all at once.
Cody hinted on, like, it took him to move away to really appreciate what he had back in Humboldt County. And that's, I think, is important for the Humboldt County kids, because we live in a unique place here, especially for dairy farming. We can do a lot of stuff here with pasture. We have more access to water, rain. So it makes, I don't know, makes dairy farming a little bit easier in some ways.
Well, I mean, I grew up in Humboldt County, not in a multi-generational family, but I couldn't come back. I couldn't come back if I didn't go away.
Yeah,
definitely.
So were your parents encouraging of this? I mean, I talked to some families and, like, you know, you shouldn't come anywhere near this. It's hard work. It's a lifestyle of no vacations and commitment. And you've got a lot of hungry mouths to feed, and someone's got to be there 24 hours a day to make sure everything's going okay. I mean, how did your parents relate to you about this opportunity and the challenge?
I never really talked to him. I said, I quit my job in Texas, and I called my dad, and I said, hey, well, I think I'm going to move home. He goes, okay. And that was pretty much the end of the phone call. There was no long, deep discussion. I just showed up, and then he goes, oh, you're milking tomorrow morning. And I was like, well, I got to unpack first. And he goes, I got rubber boots for you. And that was
that was it.
And that was 5 years ago. Right. So 4 years ago.
But, I mean, you went through 4-H. You went through FFA. Yeah. I mean, you certainly had some direction.
Definitely.
And encouragement, right?
But No, my parents, they never, they never held me back. They're like, well, they never pushed me anyway, but they definitely supported me the whole way through the 4-H and FFA thing. Made raising animals a lot easier, you know, being on a farm and
my family definitely was supportive of it all the way through. They wanted, you know, I was in 4-H and FFA with Jeff for a lot of it, and we showed, and I was really involved, and I loved that part.
So when you showed, what does that mean for those who don't know?
Like 4-H FFA kids going to the fair, you know, going to state fair, taking animals out, and it's like a beauty pageant for cows, essentially. Cows, toddlers, and tiaras, basically. And so I was really involved in that, and I loved it. My parents were really encouraging, and I had an ag major in college, but I think, you know, there was definitely no pressure for me to move back.
Right.
You know, they were very open with me that they hoped I would move back and that they would love for me to move back, but that they wanted it to be my choice and they wanted it to be the right choice for me, and that they'd completely understood if it wasn't the right choice for me. So, which was a great opportunity for me to have that kind of understanding behind it.
Right. So. And so for you, Genevieve, they just checked dairy science is the only available option on your application, right? Or that's all you?
Yeah, no. that's pretty much what happened, right? But kind of going off of Jeff and Cody, they're describing their situation of, you know, what it was like after college and what those conversations looked like. But for me, I almost feel like what they just talked about, that's what I'm in the midst of right now, is those conversations. You know, over the summer, I had came back to the family farm to work after a year on the road serving as a California FFA state officer.
Which is Future Farmer of America, is that correct?
Future Farmers of America, you got it. And so coming back to that and being able to have that conversation, it's definitely one that needs to happen, especially, I was actually just talking to my dad yesterday about how, you know, when you're passing from generation to generation, how communication is absolutely key. And sometimes those conversations, at least in our family, have been like a little bit tough to have to recognize, you know, is this something we want to keep doing? Is this something that's still going to be profitable? And I think at the end of the day, it really just comes down to having those conversations and seeing how that plays out. But I know, I think, was it Cody or Jeff that mentioned it earlier about going away and getting a job and then coming back to the family farm? That's definitely something my parents have been encouraging of, is go work somewhere else for 5 years and then let us know if you want to come back. And I think that's really important to gain that outside perspective for sure.
Great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk. I'm Jana Valakovic. This is KHSU. We're talking with three next-generation dairy men and women. My guests are Cody Nicholson-Stratton from Foggy Bottoms Dairy in Ferndale, Jeff Mason from Arcata Bar M Organic Dairy, and Genevieve Regley from the Regley Dairy in Ferndale. Well, let's talk about some perspective. So we were talking about you all getting some perspective on your jobs, but let's give some context for the kind of dairying operations that happen in Humboldt and Del Norte counties and how that maybe compares or contrasts to both the national world and what's happening in California. So maybe this is a good question for you, Cody. So what's happening with the milk industry and milk products? Are they on the rise or decline at the national level?
So milk itself has sort of been on the rise as far as the volume being produced. Fluid milk consumption is down. People just don't drink as much milk as they used to. And so we're seeing a lot less fluid milk being consumed. There's more demand, though, for like snack foods, yogurts, cheeses, and definitely in like the whey proteins, because you see a lot of whey protein going into bars and milkshakes and that sort of thing. So, and the specialty options are definitely on the rise, but nationally, consumption is down a bit. And really, we're definitely seeing a decline in the number of dairies. Mm. And on the West Coast in particular, you see a decline in the number of cows, the number of dairies, the amount of milk being produced. But there is still growth in other parts of the country, and so that isn't really helping us balance out that oversupply that we're seeing right now. Mm. So that's sort of the national trend right now. California was the number one dairy state, and projections are that we will kind of fall out of that within the next few years because dairies are leaving California or just going out of business at an incredibly high rate this year.
So. Okay, so maybe Genevieve, how would you say that Humboldt and Del Norte operators are similar or different to dairies in other regions?
So definitely a niche market that we have here is the amount of organic dairy farms in Humboldt and Del Norte counties. I believe the most recent statistic was out of the 68 dairies, 4 are conventional and 62 of those, or 64 of those, are organic. So as you see this major local trend, it's definitely a market that both counties have really taken under, and in the area, it's pretty much green year round. So we're able to do that. We're able to have our cows out on pasture. We're able to meet those minimum pasture requirements. And we're also able to provide what the consumer wants, because we see a shift in consumer demand. And that consumer demand is towards those more organic products. That's what we're ultimately able to offer from Humboldt and Del Norte counties because of the climate that we have. And since we're on the coast, and it's really just a big a big marketing marketing advantage for us, opposed to other parts and other regions of the country, as well as California.
Okay. So we always hear those happy cow, you know, references, which is what part of the California Dairy Association theme or something, right? So do we fit that profile perfectly, or are we a little different from that? Or
so no. Those commercials you see on TV, those are pretty much from Humboldt County, a lot of the commercials, because of the environment that we're in.
Yeah, well, Humboldt County is kind of like ideal dairy country as far as like the weather and climate. We don't have like all the heat stress issues that farms in other parts of the U.S. deal with in the summertime. So we don't have a big dip off in milk production in the hot days. The cow's reproductive health is better. That always fails when it gets really hot. What are some other problems? The heat causes a bunch of problems, but cows ideal temperature is like 50 degrees, 55 degrees. Yeah. I mean, most of the breeds originated from areas
like ours,
like that, you know. So, mm-hmm.
In Humboldt County, you know, our traditional regional farming practices really lent to going organic and that organic market, which is, like Genevieve was saying, is huge here. When you look at 64 dairies being organic and only 4 being conventional, you know, we are traditionally a pasture-based farming system, and so that transition to organic just makes sense where we are.
I mean, can anywhere else actually meet those standards for pasture-based?
The grazing rules, not many other people can. It's hard to do that without heavy irrigation.
Yeah.
And for us, though, like I was saying, there's a lot less stress from outside factors on our cows here. So they get sick a lot less, and they have stronger immune systems. So being organic, we don't have to worry about treating cows as much. We do preventative maintenance and keep them healthier so we don't have to treat them later. So it was kind of like when the whole organic thing really started taking off here, like 15 years ago in Humboldt, 20 years ago, it was the beginning of it. It wasn't really that big of a switch for us. We were already doing most of the stuff like that.
Exactly.
Okay. And so are we facing those same national challenges of contraction in the industry and dairies on the edge, or are we holding tough here?
Somewhat. So I would say, unfortunately, like despite being behind the Redwood Curtain, we are impacted by the global economy and those global trends and the national trends within dairy. And so they do affect us. We have multiple co-ops that we sell our milk to, or creameries, you know, depending on which dairy it is. And so that will, you know, some of them are national. So there's definitely an effect in that. If there's a lot of milk on the market, even in Humboldt, we're going to feel the pressure from that. I think we're doing a little better in a lot of ways than other parts of the country are. We're definitely not seeing dairies in Humboldt going out of business, but we have, at least not yet, but we have seen dairies, you know, losing contracts from co-ops and, you know, processors moving out of the state, and then those dairies now scrambling to find somewhere to send their milk, which is really sad when you're watching a family farm, you know, that had a solid contract with a processor and they leave the state and now they have to find somewhere else, and there's so much milk on the market, it's difficult to find a home for your milk.
And you got to do that quickly.
And you have to do it very quickly.
Yeah. You know,
it's a lot of, you know, if you don't have a home for your milk, it just goes down the drain, and that's a really costly loss for a farm.
Right.
We all have like home for our milk right now, but we've kind of got like the first stage of like cutting back. So if we a home to ship it to.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So they did like an average of our production for the last couple of years, and they said, well, you can't really produce over this, and if you produce over this, you're going to get paid a lot less for that overage. And so they're still buying our milk, you know, but if we go produce too much, then, you know, we get cut back.
Okay, so maybe we should talk about milk as a product. So it's typically sold as a commodity.
Yes.
And maybe you, Cody, can explain what a commodity means. Okay. and how that affects this concept of how your contract might work. And
yeah, so milk is Milk is very complicated. The commodity and pricing, I mean, there you can get a degree in it. So my understanding is going to be pretty basic. So there is like a set, as dairy farmers, we're price takers. We're not price setters, so or price makers. We don't make the price for our milk. We are given a price that will be paid for it. And that's really driven by supply and demand. What's in the national inventory. So, you know, there's certain products that you can keep, like barrels of cheddar or blocks of cheddar. Like they have a shelf life, so they can, and butter, they can stock up a lot of it. And so then there's this national inventory. Well, if we're still producing a bunch of milk, but we haven't been able to move product either somewhere else in the country or somewhere else globally, and you have this huge inventory, processors don't need milk. And because they're just going to keep adding to an existing inventory. And so that drives our prices down. And the way pricing works is that there's a set like minimum that the federal milk marketing order will set. And so this is like the minimum price a processor can pay you. And so you might be lucky to have a processor that creates a contract and you get paid over that. And that's great. And in a lot of cases, you don't. You just are getting that federal set price. And if you're organic, you are going to be over that price because that's a conventional price. And so you do definitely have some insurance there that you're going to be making more than a conventional producer because you're an organic producer. So your price is going to be higher. At some points, it's been double. But
wow. So how frequently does that price fluctuate?
Weekly.
Weekly.
Yeah. Daily even, because it's impacted by
huge margins,
by small
cents,
generally small cents. But even on a, you know, if cheddar takes a jump or a dive, like that can actually have a pretty, you know, on the Chicago trade, that can have a pretty drastic impact on what your tank price might be, you know, the next week or, you know, the month. And so generally, like, you'll see the prices every week, kind of what they're doing. And that also is going to depend on your contract. So some contracts are set for the year and you have a yearly price, and some of them you're getting paid kind of, it fluctuates monthly or weekly.
So that's a very complicated business decision to figure out.
Really complicated.
The most common word when people are talking about dairy milk pricing is volatile.
Right. But I mean, how do you make long-term business decisions given that you've got volatility?
So what you do is you talk to a dairy economist and they look at your like block cheddar prices, the butter prices, the whey prices, and they kind of project out what is, you know, on the markets, what are all these commodities that milk, which is another commodity, is turned into. And then you kind of gauge like, well, in February of 2019, this is what milk should be worth. And you hope that you're close to that and you base your business on those projections. And then you could be off and it could be great because it was, you know, a lot higher, or it could be off and it could be way lower and then you're cutting back and trying to cut costs.
Do you guys have fingernail cuticles left?
No, not at all. I don't sleep much.
Oh my goodness.
So. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Thursday Night Talk. I'm Jana Valakovic, your host. We're talking about next generation dairy men and women. And my guests are Cody Nicholson Stratton from Foggy Bottoms Dairy in Ferndale, and Jeff Mason from Arcata Bar in Organic Dairy, and Genevieve Regley from the Regley Dairy in Ferndale. We welcome your calls at 826-4805. Or 1-800-640-5911, or give us a text at 707-492-KHSU. So, Genevieve, maybe we could talk about niche dairy products. So I don't know if organic is considered a niche, but...
Definitely, yeah.
Can you help us understand what a niche might mean? So that's sort of a specialty market, right?
Absolutely. So definitely a niche market that has really peaked in the past 5 to 10 years has been grass milk. And our family actually has an 80 cow smaller dairy that's separate from our main dairy. And part of that 80 cow dairy was helping to start this movement of grass milk. I mean, these cows are fed no grain, meaning like no barley, no corn, and having those minimum days that they have to be out on pasture. So another special part of this product that Organic Valley offers is it's also non-homogenized, meaning that the fat in the milk will actually float to the top. Mm. So it's basically getting it closer to what consumers would know as raw milk, meaning you have to shake it up in order to separate that fat content. But the health benefits that are coming with this grass milk and the studies that have been done are definitely something that consumers have been looking for. For example, one of the biggest health benefits that grass milk has is it's naturally higher in omega-3 and conjugated linoleic acid, which are both substances that are known for helping prevent heart disease and just really being healthier for the consumer. And that's something they've definitely been looking for and something we've been able to provide because of, again, that climate we have here in Humboldt County.
So Jeff, you also sell into that grass milk line, right?
Yeah, we started into that almost 4 years ago now. Okay. Definitely 3 years ago. So Genevieve touched on the health benefits of the grass milk, but there's also some other benefits to it. We aren't trucking in as much outside feed either. So our dairy maybe has a slightly smaller carbon footprint because getting alfalfa and some other feeds into Humboldt County be a little more difficult because otherwise you're coming from the Central Valley or Klamath Falls area. So there's that benefit to it. Our cows are out on pasture a lot more throughout the day, so there's less cows on concrete, and then all the manure that they leave from concrete goes into some sort of holding pond or a lagoon. And those lagoons can be kind of problematic with methane and other gases they produce.
As the organics decompose.
Yeah. So they're out on the pasture a lot more. And
Okay, so that's the niche that you guys are filling, both organic and then this grass milk. Are you doing anything?
We're organic, and we produce for Rumiano cheese in Crescent City, and so we do organic. We also maintain like a certified humane and do the verified GMO free, and then they do. In addition to selling domestically, they have some international export, which is pretty cool for such a small creamery. So we maintain organic certifications for the Chinese government as well, because there's export to China.
Interesting.
So that's kind of like our niche markets. We're pasture-based, but we're not a grass-based or a grass dairy. So we do feed a little bit of grain in our milk barn.
Okay, So how would you say what's different in how you manage than your parents or grandparents did?
Well, I would say that...
Because you probably got the most decision-making now, right?
So I would say, the difference now is that I'm making the decisions and I'm paying the bills, or as my dad likes to call me, I'm the director of no fun because I do all the money's part of our business. But in the actual operation of our farm, not a lot has changed. They've been, both my dad and my grandfather, we're pretty progressive in as far as like pasture management and really trying to be early adopters for a lot of rotational grazing. And
what is rotational grazing?
So we rotate our cows. We have a set number of fields, and then we actually break those down even to smaller parcels that they get each day. We have a field they go into after morning milking, one they go into after night milking. And so what we do is we practice high intensity, short duration grazing. So they're on a small parcel of ground for a short duration. They utilize the feed better in that small area. They deposit manure in a more concentrated area, which helps with the nitrogen cycle and so natural fertilization. And then because they're not having the option to preference the plants that they would like, they're eating everything. And so that stimulates regrowth. And so we'll actually be able to return to the same area after a shorter rest period. And we can set it so we get the optimum stubble length and residual left.
Stubble means like how high?
How high the grass is.
Okay.
And so, because really if you just turn cows loose and, a 10-acre pasture, 100 cows, it's like kids in a candy store. They're going to go pick out their favorite things and then, eventually they'll come back and eat the broccoli, but they're definitely going to get, the lemon heads and the air heads and everything before they recycle back around.
And that's the clovers and...
The clovers and the alfalfas and the legumes. They're going to preference what they like. So
right. So you then move your cows off every couple, it sounds like half a day.
Half a day, yeah. So ours are on a half a day rotation. So we're pretty active in that. But really, that was something, I went to college with
for Rangeland Ecology with this idea that I would learn all these cool new things, and most of them Humboldt County dairy farmers were already practicing. So
Oh, bummer.
It was not so exciting.
How about Genevieve or Jeff? Do either of you do anything or observe something different than what was happened in the past?
We started, when we started the ORV grass milk stuff, we started doing the rotational grazing just like Cody was talking about.
So that's the Organic Valley?
Yeah.
ORV.
Yep. and we have it set up where our cows are like in 5-acre fields, you know, one in the morning, one at night, and they come back to that field like every 15 days or so. And that's what we had. We worked with some HSU students, and they did the capstone project.
Uh-huh.
I keep wanting to say senior project, but their capstone project, and they did a bunch of soil samples on our farm, and they were trying to figure out the best days or how many days it takes for like the best mix between quantity and quality of grass when you come back. And then Organic Valley is also having us do some different soil amendments. So we've been spreading lime, zinc, chicken manure on our farms, and the HSU students also help with the sampling on just figuring out the quantities and amounts and where our dollars are best spent on soil amendments.
So you're getting a little more precise and,
uh-huh.
and okay, a little more data. How about you, Genevieve? Do you see
definitely.
Things?
So pretty much very, very similar things, and that seems to be the trend throughout Humboldt and Del Norte counties too. A lot of us are just on that rotational grazing pattern just to make sure that we're not only doing what's best for the cows, but we're also doing what's best for the land, because that's definitely something that we value, being multi-generational. We want to make sure that, you know, our kids and our grandkids are able to dairy on that exact same land, because that's ultimately like all we have. And as we see, you know, this growing population and more people on the planet, we have to understand that we're not getting any more farmland. And that's why we ultimately have to be really just stewards of that land. And that's why we use practices such as rotational grazing.
Great. Well, what does certified organic really mean? And how would you compare that to a conventional operation? I'm not sure who to direct that to. But
Cody, go for it.
Well, Genevieve and Jeff can definitely correct anything I say wrong. But from my standpoint, certified organic in a lot of ways is kind of a legal term. There's a set federal standard, and that deals with some of it is husbandry. A lot of it has to do with spatial requirements, management of animals, you know, their access to the outdoors, the amount of time they're on pasture, the amount of dry matter. So the dry matter that they consume, how much of that comes from pasture. And so a lot of it is pretty technical. And so for me, like certified, my view of certified organic is it's really this legal term, and it's sort of a set standard that you have to comply with in order to use that label. And I don't know, Jeff and Genevieve might have a different view of it, but I look at it more as like the USDA National Organic Program standard. And I like to think of it in a way, it's the closest thing to actually knowing your farmer. So as a consumer, you know that it's the closest thing to actually knowing your farmer. So maybe you don't know the farmer, but you know they at least meet this standard to produce the food that I'm buying.
Yeah, absolutely. And going off of that, organic certified gives that consumer an idea of how that product was raised, or how our cows are treated on a day-to-day basis. And it really, it's something that has definitely grown to make the consumer more comfortable with their food, whether or not like that's actually true, because we see on especially in California, how well, whether it's in the valley or on the coast, that we really treat our animals. It's just a different way to produce the milk that we all have grown to love, and it's definitely a label that consumers can easily recognize.
I guess what I'm interested in, thank you for those answers, is kind of understanding what the distinctions mean. So, like, what happens if you have a sick animal under an organic operation versus a conventional operation? Or, you know, how do you deal with those issues?
Yeah, our biggest thing, we try to prevent before we have to treat. There are some organic remedies that work okay. We, like our sick calves, we use this our calves that may have scours, diarrhea. We have a product called Rebound that's organic certified, and it's just a really strong probiotic, I guess is the best way to do it, the best way to put it. But then some of the other, you know, if we do have to like treat an animal, then she's marked and flagged and she's sold out of the herd as a non-organic too.
So you make sure she gets what she needs and then she's got a different home.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's often we hear that complaint from conventional agriculture. The other side sometimes is sort of like that their view is that organic maybe doesn't have that standard of animal welfare because you're not using antibiotics, but that's really a misconception. We know that we don't have, like Jeff said, we're doing preventative because we know that for the animal to stay in our herd, we need to prevent anything from happening. So for like our calves, I look at our calf, I'm with our calves no less than 4 times a day, like that I'm actually like walking through and checking every calf, because if anything is wrong with them or they look even slightly off, I need to deal with it before it becomes an issue that might require antibiotics and then exclude them from an organic program. And so, but we are required by the organic standards and organic program to treat a sick animal. So you're definitely like trying to prevent it, but if, you know, all else fails, you go back to a conventional treatment. Whereas in conventional operation, you always have the antibiotics as an option.
But I would the husbandry be generally different or sort of the same? You just have a different suite of treatment options in the conventional line.
I would say organic is maybe more hands-on because your suite of options is more limited, so you need to deal with something before it becomes a problem. And that's not to say that conventional producers don't take great care of their animals, but we have to be incredibly observant to catch something before it becomes a problem.
Okay. Great. So we welcome your calls at 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911 or give us a text at 707-492-KHSU. So I guess I'm curious, what do you wish consumers knew about what you do or produce?
There's a lot of things. You know, I kind of wish they knew how hard they worked, how hard we worked. Sometimes I feel like they don't. People complain about like the price of milk in the store. Oh, a gallon of milk is $4 or $6. And I'm like, yeah, but I busted my butt for the gallon of milk.
Yeah. All right.
Definitely. And a recent conversation I actually just had with my mom was about when my mom and my dad were starting out and slowly taking over the family business, and how one day, basically, mom, I remember her telling me that she basically told my dad, every time you go to work, you're going to work to lose money, in a way. Because at that time, it was the market was really low, and dairy farmers really weren't making a whole lot of money. But it's not really just a career to us. It's a way of life. And it's something that we value so much, and that we really hope the consumer values at the end of the day when they have that gallon of milk on their table. Because ultimately, what people don't understand, they do not value. And if they don't value it, then they're not going to protect it. And what we don't protect, we ultimately lose. And we have to understand that consumers, because we're all consumers, we're the ones that are making decisions. We're the ones that are voting. We're voting on policies that are going to affect dairy farmers. We're voting on individuals. We're electing individuals into government that we're hoping will ultimately protect us dairy farmers. And they're a key part of why we do what we do. And we need their support in order to keep a future in this industry for sure.
Tag mine on there. I don't maybe have something I would want the consumers to know so much as I'd like them to think about when they go to the grocery store and you're looking at that block of cheese that you're going to buy or that gallon of milk. Maybe, you know, take the moment to think about the story that's behind it. It's not just a gallon of milk. You're buying our family's story in that moment. Like, you're making a decision to support family farms. You're making a choice as to, you know, how food is produced. And, you know, when you buy cheese that or milk that comes from one of our farms, not only are you supporting us, but you're supporting the past generations that were on those farms, that worked that farm, that kept that legacy going. And so there's a lot of, you know, history behind a gallon of milk that we don't think about. It's just easy to grab the gallon of milk and put it in our cart or that block of cheese. But, you know, if you take a moment to think about it, it's actually an incredible thing that you're doing and a powerful thing when you make that choice to maybe buy organic Valley milk or buy Rumiano cheese. You're making a choice to really support something local, and you're supporting a tradition and a legacy that you might not consider otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And in some way, that opening question I asked you about whether it was a burden or responsibility, I mean, I think what I'm gaining from our conversations is this idea that you're consciously making a choice and you're financially investing. And in some ways, it almost seems like there was no other option. I mean, you have sort of a career path that was laid out before you in many respects. And that's a lot of responsibility. I mean, you've got that generational heritage that you have to steward, and you don't want it to be on your watch that things go sour, right?
I'm glad you picked up on that, because I try to explain that to people who aren't from farms, and I'm like the pressure that you feel to work on it. And I've had a hard time, like, you know, finding the right words to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like trying to explain our cow herd to somebody. Like, I love our cows, and, you know, I spend all day just concerned about their health and their well-being. But and I was, you know, I'm explaining to them, they're like, well, yeah, they're your cows. I'm like, yeah, but it's more than that. Like, these cows represent 5 generations of selective breeding and husbandry and effort that my family's put into them, from the original 3 that these now 110 cows have been produced out of. Like, that's an amazing history that's in our field that exists nowhere else. Like, that is just our history, and it's all right here on this 120 acres. And so it's a lot of pressure to really, you know, keep that going and protect it.
Right. And then you've still got your family to, you know, lean over your shoulder and say, hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah, point things out. We don't agree with that.
Right. Okay. Well, so I think we've gone on to the, you know, you all are basically producers of milk, but you're not processors. And do you think about that value added opportunity? Is it an opportunity? Is it something that you consider, like, developing? Like, we've seen that with Alexander Farms, for example. They've now got these kind of refined boutique lines of milk, and who knows what's going to come next, whether it will be cheese and yogurt or...
Yeah, I don't think I'd do it at our farm. It's not... I don't know if I'd want the headache of it. It seems like a... I don't know. It's me currently at the farm. It's just like me, and I have one guy milking, and I couldn't imagine trying to start another business and finding a place to have my milk processed and trying to get it into stores and stuff. I don't know. Seems like a headache that I don't.
Definitely. Your nose is wrinkling.
Yeah.
For those who can't see it.
I definitely have a lot of respect for the Alexander family and what they're doing. With starting their own creamery, but for us at this point, I think right now, especially the way the dairy industry is, we're just trying to make it through this period, and just trying to make sure that we're profitable right now. So any sort of investment like that isn't in the near future, but it's definitely something that could be a possibility. In the next generation, or something down the road, because we may not be looking at it, but say for my family, the next generation might—that's something they might consider. But regardless, it'll be exciting to see how it changes in the different ways we find to market our milk.
Yeah, and like Genevieve said, I have the utmost respect for people that make that choice, and, you know, there are definitely producer processors around the state that do a fantastic job with it, but it's hard. Like, that is not an easy business, an easy niche to get into. It's expensive. It requires an incredible amount of time, and it's a skill set that I personally don't possess. I'm not a cheesemaker. That's not a knowledge base I have. I'm not a marketing expert. You know, I can play around a little bit with our social media and sell some yarn from our sheep, but to market an entire line of, you know, dairy products, that's a lot. And to do that in California with the regulations that we have, and to remain compliant, I mean,
right?
That's a lot. And so, no, I wouldn't consider it myself.
Okay. But
I worked for a small cheesemaker in college for my part-time job. And I saw that in the end, she was just like trying to manage her farmers markets and selling cheese there, and they weren't even like, they just hired people out to work on the farm because they had to invest so much time into the starting up the cheese business.
All right. Great. So you guys like to stay and do what you do and do the animal management side?
Definitely.
That's great. All right. Well, I believe we've got a caller on the line. Welcome, caller, to KHSU.
Hi. Thanks so much. First of all, I really appreciate your show. I've actually learned quite a bit about milk. And I have a question about the organic herd. The whole thing about keeping a close eye on your cows and making sure that they're healthy. And then if they're not, then you have to kind of go through more mainstream ways of dealing with their health problems. And you basically have to sell them out of your herd because then you can no longer use them for the organic pod. So when they do get antibiotics, how long do the antibiotics stay in their bloodstream before that same cow can be reconsidered to be brought back into the organic herd? And I'll take my question offline.
Thank you for your question.
Oh, so the question was how long until they can come back into the organic? So they can actually, once a cow is treated with with antibiotics, conventionally an organic cow, she is never considered organic again. This is how the standard is written. They cannot transition back. There is a withdrawal period, and every antibiotic is labeled. And in California, now to use antibiotics, you need a veterinary prescription. So your vet will set that up with you for your treatment plan, and you'll know how long until that's cleared her system and her milk is safe for human consumption.
Or meat,
depending on what they're doing. But so she could go after that point to a conventional dairy and be milked, but she would never have the option of coming back to an organic dairy.
That's very interesting. So is there a testing of milk for any residues?
Yes, every load of milk. So all milk, conventional or organic, will not have antibiotics in it. So that's something you can, when you go to the grocery store, no matter what, you're guaranteed that your milk that you're buying is antibiotic free. Every load of milk that is picked up at a farm is tested for antibiotics. And if a milk tank tests positive, it's dumped. And so, I mean, that's a pretty expensive loss for a farmer to lose that. So there's a high financial investment or interest in not putting a cow that's been treated into your tank. The even worse scenario is that if that were to end up in the truck itself and then test positive, like, and then they get that test and have to dump it, and then that dairy buys the entire truckload of milk, because the other dairies whose milk is in there have to be paid. So it's a really expensive mishap. So there is a lot of interest in not.
Okay. That makes a lot. Makes a lot of sense. So it's on your dollar to make sure that nothing slips through. So if an animal gets sick, then it's separated, treated, managed, returned to health, and then is moved into a conventional line. And then after a period of clearance, then that animal can go back into the conventional line in its normal production if it resumes health.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's quite interesting to understand. So I'm trying to look at the time here. We're getting closer towards the end. Michael, do we have a caller or do we have a call? No. Okay. Where can consumers locally find your product? So we've got some Organic Valley and we have some Rumiano. Are they in most stores? Certain stores?
Yeah, I believe you can find the Organic Valley stuff at Co-op, Eureka Natural Foods. Winco has it, and I think Costco used to carry it, but not anymore. But yeah, Winco and the Co-op are the biggest ones.
Yeah, Rumiano can be purchased at locally. It's at the Co-op or Eureka Natural Foods. Costco carries it. Grocery Outlet once in a while has some stuff. And then nationally, it's at Whole Foods.
It's at Whole Foods.
Nationwide.
And where is the grass milk line? Is it It's more specialty?
No, I believe it's right next to all the regular Organic Valley stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
Also, if you're at Costco, my little sister Gianna is actually featured on the Organic Valley string cheese package. So Organic Valley has string cheese at Costco's nationwide. So look for a little girl that doesn't really look like me, but she's pretty adorable. she's on the packages.
Well, that's good to know. I'm excited. Since I've been talking to you, I want to go try this grass line. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe we could go over a little bit more about, and maybe we covered it, but the kind of the distinction between milk that's produced on pasture versus not. It sounds like there are some more health benefits and there's some greater qualities. What about like butterfat and overall components associated with, you know, what you can produce from it? I mean, I heard for a while that Costco was used a lot of the milk from here for their lines because it had a higher butterfat content. Can you help me understand that?
Well, I guess we definitely have higher butterfat in Humboldt County because, wouldn't you say Humboldt County is like majority Jerseys? Kobe?
Yeah, so our breed definitely. Composition is majority Jerseys, which are going to be a higher protein, higher fat cow, higher beta carotenes, which makes our butters and our cheeses that really pretty orange color. And so definitely a lot of that has to do with just the breed composition that you're seeing in Humboldt. Black and white cows aren't the most common breed.
So it's the breed more than the pasture.
Yeah, there are some benefits to our soils and, you know, kind of where we're at, but
yeah.
Okay, all right. And then I guess I'll end with kind of a concluding set of questions. And I guess if you could make it from the negative to the positive, like sort of what keeps you up at night? And sort of, what do you hope? Where do you hope we're going? And
yeah, so what I, well, I don't know. It just seems like I went to Cal Poly, and a lot of my friends are still in the dairy industry, and they're talking. Well, I'm, you know, my family's getting out. We're probably going to be done in a year. So and so's, you know, my neighbor just sold out, and I'm kind of wondering. It's like, well, I wonder if I should have spent the last 5 years somewhere else and maybe not got into this. You know, that's what really worries me, you know. Could I have been investing this time, you know, working for a different company, and then I'm going to have to, you know, if the dairy industry kind of falls out in Humboldt County or my family, you know, can't stay in it anymore, it's like, oh, shoot. You know, I could have spent that time somewhere else working for a different company and working my way up there.
Do you see the actual signs that that's a real possibility?
Well, we're doing okay now, but like we said earlier, the milk pricing is so volatile. It's unpredictable.
Right. Right. So now let's take it to the positive. So where do you hope to be?
Oh, where do I hope to be?
Yeah. I'm kind of going both. Yeah.
I would hope that in a few years now, we're still milking some organic Jerseys in Arcata. Maybe grow the herd slightly and, possibly, grow it slightly because I'm hoping that my brother kind of wants to come back and we can, you know, venture off and take the farm in different directions. We used to raise a lot of pigs, me and my brother together. And I really want to get more into selling more compost too.
Okay.
So.
All right. So some diversification, bring some new family members back. So Genevieve, we've got about 2 minutes left. So I'm going to split it a minute each with you each and Cody. So let's start with you. So what do you worry about and what do you think you're, what are you optimistic about too?
Definitely just going off of Jeff is the amount of dairies that are selling out. One of my good family friends, their dairy farm just sold out, and they were fourth generation from Switzerland. And just hearing that makes you worried. It makes you really, really worried for the future. But it's also an industry that has survived since basically the beginning of time. And I have no doubt that we're going to continue to survive and continue to thrive and find more ways to produce more while using less, because that's what we ultimately want to do. And we're the type of people that aren't going to stop until that is done.
Okay, great. How about you, Cody?
Literally everything keeps me up at night. The volatility of pricing, the, you know, worrying about if a gate was closed or cows can get out on the road, liability associated with that. I mean, everything, new regulation. But on the other hand, we, like Genevieve said, like we have survived for so long, centuries, that the dairy industry has made it. I'm seventh generation, so